This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There are many questions still to be answered about the shootings at Virginia Tech yesterday, including one which may never be answered. Why? Police believe they now know who. Sung-hui Cho, a 23-year-old senior born in South Korea but resident in this country for almost 15 years. Later, we hope to speak with one of his professors, but we will focus today on the people who were killed yesterday morning. We'll also bring you updates from Blacksburg, and we'll listen in to parts of the convocation that's being held on the campus. And we want to hear from you. If you're connected to yesterday's events and listening to us on Radio IQ in Central and Western Virginia, or if you have insight from Red Lake, Columbine, Jonesboro, the Texas Tower, Pearl River, or Paducah, give us a call. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. One of the victims of yesterday's shooting was a student named Ryan Clark, known as Stack to his friends. He was a senior studying biology and English at Virginia Tech. On graduation, Ryan hoped to continue his education and pursue a doctoral degree in cognitive neuroscience. Ryan was a member of the university's marching band, the Marching Virginians, where he participated in food drives and served as the band librarian and personnel officer. Joining us now is Denise Aspel. She's a friend of Ryan Clark, and she joins us from the band room at Floyd County High School in Virginia. It's nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
And I take it you're speaking to us from the band room. That was at least part of your connection with Ryan?
Yes, it sure was. We were in the March of Virginians and the University Symphony Band for 3 or 4 years.
And what can you tell us about him?
Ryan was just one of the best people I ever met. Even if he wasn't affected, I would still say the same thing. He would give you the shirt off his back, just even if he didn't know you. Hmm. He would always make you smile. You know, if you had a bad day, he could cheer you up, or he would just add that little extra to the conversation, just bubbly guy, just friend to everybody, always just a nice, genuine person.
What instrument did he play?
He actually played baritone and euphonium, brass instruments.
Brass instruments. Was he a good musician?
He really was. He was leadership in the March of Virginians. He helped, you know, the younger students with their music and their drill as far as where they're going, what forms they're making, and played very well in the symphony band.
He was, I understand he also had a twin brother.
Yes, I never actually met his brother, but I did see that as well.
Yeah. What are you going to miss most about him?
Honestly, just the good things he did. He was always volunteering with the band, with myself, and the other band members who would stay after practice, come before practice, go to the professors and directors and ask if they needed anything. It's just seeing him, it's going to be a big change not to have him around anymore.
It must have come as a tremendous shock. I mean, yesterday when you heard the news and wondered if any of the people you knew were involved.
Right. I was actually teaching class, and, you know, I don't have a news or radio in my room. But my mom actually had to call me on my cell phone, which is a big no-no, obviously, during school. But I figured, my mom's calling during the middle of the day. This must be a big deal. Let me see what it is. She said, "Are you okay? Is everybody you know okay?" And she let me know that there had been a shooting. So I just started calling everyone I knew on campus, and I knew 4 RAs on campus. So I tried to get them first.
RAs are residential
advisors.
Uh-huh. Right?
They're like the dorm moms, just making sure the younger guys are acclimating well and, you know, doing the things they need to succeed in college. But we did not hear anything from Stack and a few other of my friends because of the phone lines being jammed. They could call out of Blacksburg pretty easily, but calling in was getting very hard. It was really reminded me of September 11th. It was a really weird situation. But around lunchtime, I finally got word that Ryan Stack had been hurt, but that was all we knew, that he was injured and they did take him away. We didn't know anything more until about 5 o'clock when we got word from his local newspaper that they had notification that he did pass.
I'm terribly sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Are you going to be going to his funeral?
I hope to. I haven't heard of any arrangements as of yet, but I hope to find those out and make it to it. I know there will be a big hokey showing there to
Denise Aspel.
Heaven.
Denise Aspel, thank you so much. And again, we're sorry for your loss.
Thank you very much.
Denise Aspel, a friend of Ryan Clark, band director now at Floyd County High School, where she's been talking to us from Floyd County in Virginia. Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. We're asking those of you who have had experience with shootings. Regrettably, there have been more than a few that are not unlike the one that happened at Virginia Tech yesterday. But also those of you who have connections to that shooting, to remember some of the people who have been hurt. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk at npr.org. Let's begin with Laura, and Laura's calling us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Yeah, I was in San Francisco during the 101 California shootings, it's, of course, bringing all that back. And I was not a victim, but I knew several of them. And it's nice to hear you talk more about the victims than about the shooter. That's kind of a relief.
Yeah. We're going to find out, I guess, in the days and weeks ahead, just about everything that's known about the person who did the shooting. But sometimes those who are the victims, they tend to get forgotten a little bit.
Exactly. And it's really good that I think you guys are doing a great job at highlighting what these people had and what they were in the world rather than the one person that took it away.
Mm. And what do you remember about the friends you lost back in California?
We would get together for lunch or after for drinks and just the conversations. The non-work aspect of it is what I miss and recall the most.
And every time one of these incidents seems to happen, I'm sure you remember that.
Yes. If not every day now, because it's been a long time, it will be every day for a while now.
Thanks very much, Laura. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Laura with us from Ann Arbor in Michigan. And let's see if we can now talk with, this is Deb. Deb's with us from Des Moines in Iowa.
Yes, hello. This is Deb.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling in because I had actually was at the University of Iowa in 1991 in, I think it was November 1st, and there was also a school shooting.
And what happened there?
I believe the student's name was Gong Lu. He was also a foreign student who was disgruntled with a paper that he did not receive a recognition for.
Mm-hmm.
And he had also shot and killed, I think, 11 or 12 people, including some professors. And it was very devastating back then. And just hearing it on the radio again yesterday reminded me of the feelings of terror that the students will go through. And, you know, being afraid, in the evenings when they're alone. So there's a lot of counseling that needs to be happening, and I'm sure that they'll be addressing that. But what a reminder that it can happen anywhere, anytime.
And particularly in that sort of a situation, where do you go to feel safe?
Well, you know, what I found, they had counselors set up pretty quickly, but spending time with your close classmates and friends was very helpful. Talking about it was really helpful. That was probably the biggest thing is not to be isolated.
Not to be isolated, to keep in touch with people. That's probably a lesson for life and a lot of the answer to a lot of problems.
That's right.
Well, Deb, thanks very much for calling.
Well, thanks for having me on the phone.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
On the social networking site Facebook, there's a newly created profile called Why Emily Hilscher is Cooler Than Me. Emily Hilscher, one of yesterday's victims, was a freshman majoring in equine sciences. She hoped to become a vet. Her friends are posting remembrances of Emily to the page, and everyone mentions her laugh. Bethany writes, I'll never forget the time Emily cooked for our Spanish class. She was always making this crazy stuff, and we had tang with calamari. It was awesome, but it was so much I couldn't eat it all. I remember Emily laughing like crazy because I switched plates when no one was looking so she would get a good grade. How I will miss that laugh. Get another caller on the line, and this is John. John's with us from Virginia. John, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, please.
Yeah, actually, I'm from Tucson, Arizona, but my daughter is a sophomore at Virginia Tech.
Ah, and have you been in touch with her?
Yes, I have. I called my former wife, who lives in Williamsburg, and she was able to verify pretty quickly yesterday morning that Katie was not only okay, but she hadn't even been on campus. I guess I've got a little bit of a concern because as soon as I heard what the scenario was, I was really alarmed that one shooting had happened and then 2 hours later another one, a major, mm-hmm. bloodbath took place. and the administration had done nothing to secure the campus in the meantime, it appears.
It appears you're right, and that's certainly one of the questions that's going to be answered, and concerned parents like you are going to be demanding answers. And I'm sure you watched the news conference by the president and various other officials that were held last night and again this morning.
Yeah, I've been pretty much glued to what's going on there, although I have talked to my daughter and I have talked to my former wife at length about all of this. That's a pretty big concern because I'm not sure that there's a whole lot society can do to stop somebody who is so troubled that they feel that the only way they can work out their internal problems is to do something as horrible as this. But when this thing happens and they say, this appears to have been a domestic incident, but they haven't detained somebody who they can link to this, then two people have been killed and this guy's on the loose, and this is really, really irresponsible, both on the part of the campus security chief and the president of the university, to have shut down the campus and not to have enlisted as many people as necessary to run around the place and let everybody know what had taken place.
Yeah, and those concerns are being answered. But again, everybody's concern right now is for the students and the individuals there and for the people who've been injured. And we're delighted to hear that your daughter is well, and I hope that none of her classmates have been injured.
Yeah, actually, she was a resident of that dormitory and may very well have known the girl who was killed, the floor above her.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I hope everything works out for her. Thanks very much for the call, John.
Thank you.
We're talking today about the situation that happened yesterday in Blacksburg, Virginia, at the campus of Virginia Tech, where 32 people were killed and by a gunman, and he later killed himself. We're going to have to take a short break. We're asking those of you who have remembrances of other shooting incidents to give us a call, particularly those who have connections to what happened yesterday in Blacksburg. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. Back after the break, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As we continue to follow the latest developments on the campus at Virginia Tech, today we remember some of the victims of yesterday's shootings. A little later, we'll also speak with a professor there. If you're connected to yesterday's events and listening to us on Radio IQ in Central and Western Virginia, or if you have insight from Red Lake, Columbine, Jonesboro, the Texas Tower, Pearl River, or Paducah, join the conversation. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also follow our coverage and read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. First, though, an update from Blacksburg. NPR's Jeff Brady is there. He joins us now on the line. Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
And you've been out in the town today. What's the mood been like?
I think the main thing people are trying to do is find some way to express the amazing amount of feeling that they're having right now. And a lot of people are doing it in how they dress. Everywhere you go, you see these maroon and orange shirts. Those, of course, are the colors of Virginia Tech. I was looking at the line of folks going into the convocation this afternoon. That line was a good half mile long, and it was just one long line of maroon and orange.
I know you also went to the center, the inn, where parents and family have gathered. What's it like there?
It's very quiet, of course, and you see some of the things that you would expect. There are ministers around counseling people. There are folks hugging each other. But the main feeling that I got from the place was this sense of anticipating information. That's what folks really want in that room, and they're very nervous, waiting for information about their friends and their family, and that's one of the big complaints folks have had is getting information and getting it in a timely manner.
And the shooter has been identified as a 23-year-old Sung Hui Cho. What do we know about him?
Well, we know that he's from South Korea. He was here as a student at Virginia Tech. He was 23 years old and an English major. And he lived on campus, but not in the building where the first shooting occurred. That's about two buildings away from that one. And we're still kind of learning a little bit about him, but we know a lot more than we did yesterday. That alone, just his identity, of course, is a lot more than we knew yesterday.
Yes, a loner, I guess that's what we tend to hear almost every time after one of these things.
Certainly does seem to be what we hear, and we're starting to get a little more of a picture of him from some of the professors, but it's been a little difficult getting that information, but I understand that that we're making some progress there.
All right, Jeff Brady, thanks. We'll be back to speak with you later.
All right, thank you.
NPR correspondent Jeff Brady joining us from Blacksburg, Virginia. G.V. Loganathan, a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Virginia Tech, taught courses in hydraulics, hydrology, and water resources engineering. He was a core advisor for undergraduates in the department. His students described him as one of their favorites, and he received several awards for excellence in teaching. On a VTech website, one colleague, Dr. William Nock, described Professor Loganathan as, quote, truly one of the most outstanding classroom educators with the College of Engineering. One of his colleagues and friends is Mark Widdowson. He's a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Virginia Tech, and he's attending this afternoon's convocation to remember his longtime friend. And thanks very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure.
And you worked with the professor for 15 years. Tell us, that was just a description, I guess, of his professional credentials a little bit. Tell us what he was like as a person.
Well, J.V. is the kind of person you'd love to work with. He's very humble and unassuming, really not pretentious at all, kind of not your typical academic. J.V. had an infectious smile, a very good sense of humor, infectious laugh, and whenever you pass him in the hall, he'd give you a nice smile and sometimes a wave, and just not a lot of small talk, but he was just always very personable.
G.V., is that what people called him?
Yes. Yes, G.V., that's all we've known him by.
Did he have a family?
Yes, he did. His wife and two daughters.
And how old was he, do you think?
G.V. is 51.
Still using the present tense. It's hard to understand that he's actually gone.
It is, Neil. It's just... I passed him on the hallway on the way to class, and just gave a thought of him in my mind as he was doing that. It was something I remembered, and so it is like it just happened. And I mean, he was just here, and now he's gone.
Well,
we also lost eight students in that classroom.
Well, thank you. I'm afraid we're going to have to cut you off. Mark Widdowson, thanks very much. And yeah, I know you're going to want to get to the convocation. We're going to take our listeners there now. And joining us now is Charles Steger, the president of Virginia Tech.
Thank you very much. You all are going to make it difficult for me to finish the speech, I have to tell you. As you know, our university community, indeed the entire nation and people from many other nations, come together to mourn and to grieve, all the while hoping that we'll awaken from what is a horrible nightmare. In the last day, I've expressed my horror and shock, but there are really no words that truly express the depth of sadness that we feel. In fact, words are very weak symbols of our true emotions at times such as this. It's overwhelming, almost paralyzing, yet our hearts and our minds call to us to come together, to share our individual attempts to comprehend the incomprehensible, to make sense of the senseless, and to find ways for our community to heal, and to slowly and painfully, but inevitably to begin to heal and to again move forward. We are very grateful that we do not have to travel this path alone, and we are grateful for all who have attended and joined us today. The expressions of sympathy and support that have poured in from all corners of our nation and from around the world, literally from around the world, have touched us. They help us cope with the incredible tragedy and have reaffirmed our basic belief in the goodness of people. We want to thank all the members of the local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, especially the Virginia Tech Police, the Blacksburg Police, the Virginia State Police, and all the emergency responders who rushed to our aid, who continue to monitor our campus, and who have the additional horror of investigating this catastrophe. We cannot thank them enough for their bravery and for their assistance. We are extremely grateful that you here in the audience today have come to help us and to help each other. We are thankful for our students and their friends and family who've offered solace and comfort to one another. In fact, the Student Government Association and the student body have organized a candlelight vigil for tonight that will take place in the drill field near the War Memorial Gym, at 8 p.m. As I've mentioned previously, but I want to emphasize, there is counseling available for all members of the university community. Counseling for students is available at the McComas Center and for faculty and staff at Squires in the Brush Mountain Room. This afternoon in this convocation, we see further testimony that the events that have occurred in our community yesterday had an impact not just on friends and family, but on millions of people from around the world. To help us mourn and to begin to heal, we have with us, of course, President George W. Bush and First Lady Laura Bush. We're very grateful for your being here today. Also, Virginia Governor Tim Kaine and First Lady Ann Holton. All of the members of the U.S. Congress representing Virginia, the Honorable Bill Bowling, Lieutenant Governor of Virginia, the Virginia Attorney General, Bob McDonnell, members of the General Assembly, as well as members who are current and former members of the Board of Visitors. We also appreciate having the Blacksburg Town Council and other local officials. We deeply appreciate your concern. Now, during his public service, Governor Kaine, who has hurriedly flown back from a trade mission in Asia, in fact, I spoke with Governor Kaine yesterday twice from Tokyo, he came back to be with us. He's focused on strong values and expanding opportunities for families. Earlier in his life, he served as a missionary and a teacher in a small village in Honduras, utilizing the twin forces of faith and education to help people. As you know, Governor Kaine has offered us whatever additional resources are needed to help cope with and heal from the pain we carry with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the 70th Governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Governor Tim Kaine.
As President Steger mentioned, Governor Kaine was on a trip to Tokyo and had to fly back to Virginia to participate in this convocation ceremony. He's now come onto the stage.
What an amazing community this is. Mr. President and Mrs. Bush, and to all who are part of this Virginia Tech community in this room, on this campus, worldwide today, it is a very bitter and sad day. And yet my wife Ann and I are very privileged to be here with you, and there's nowhere else in the world we would rather be than with you at this moment. As Charlie mentioned, Ann and I had left on Sunday morning from Richmond to go on a two-week trade mission to Asia. One of the events is actually an event in India to spotlight a wonderful program of Virginia Tech. We had been in Tokyo in the hotel for about 5 hours when we were awakened with a call about 1 a.m. to report the horrible tragedy on this campus. And we were stunned. And our first thought was, we need to get home. We need to be in Blacksburg with this community that we care so much about. We had the experience then of being up in the middle of the night and not being able to get home for about 10 hours. And so we did what people all across the world have been doing in the last couple of days. We sat there first in our hotel room and then in a coffee shop and then in an airport waiting lounge with the television on, watching to get news about what was happening on this campus and how the campus was handling it. It was different being away from home, being halfway across the world and seeing what was happening on this campus and what you students, were showing to the world. And even in the midst of the darkest day in the history of this campus, What you showed to the world yesterday, you students, was an amazing thing. Again and again and again, in all these various news outlets, students were called for to offer their thoughts and ask what they thought about their campus and how they were dealing with this tragedy. And the grief was real and very raw, and the questions were deep and troubling. But again and again, what students came back to, wearing the Virginia Tech sweatshirts, wearing the Virginia Tech caps, was the incredible community spirit and the sense of unity here on this campus, and how before it was about who was to blame or what could have been done different, it was about how we take care of each other on this wonderful, wonderful community. How proud we were, even in the midst of a sad day, to see how well you represented yourselves in this university to a worldwide community. There are deep emotions that are called forth by a tragedy as significant as this. Grieving and sadness by the boatload. Ann and I have unashamedly shed tears about this, and I know virtually all of you have as well. That is the thing you should be doing. You should be grieving. There are resources here on this campus and others who are on this campus to help you as you find need for consolation. That is so important. A second reaction that is a natural reaction is anger. Anger at the gunman, anger at the circumstance. What could have been done different? Could something have happened? That's natural as well. One of the most powerful stories in the human history of stories is that great story central to Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, the story of Job from the Old Testament, afflicted with all kinds of tragedies in his family and health. And he was angry. He was angry at his circumstances. He was angry at his Creator. He argued with God. He didn't lose his faith. But it's okay to argue. It's okay to be angry. Those emotions are natural as well. And finally, the emotions of the family members most affected, beyond grief, losing a son, losing a daughter, a brother, a sister, losing a close friend. It can go beyond grief to isolation and feeling despair. Those haunting words that were uttered on a hill on Calvary, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Despair is a natural emotion at a time like this. They're all natural. They're all appropriate. But let me ask one thing of you, this community, as you wrestle with your sadness, as you wrestle with your own feelings of anger or confusion, as you wrestle with the despair, even you family members who have lost people close to you, do not let hold of that spirit of community that makes Virginia Tech such a special place. Do not lose hold of that. You need it as a university because you've always had it. You need to maintain it. We do not need that spirit of community to be a victim of yesterday. No, you need that. You as a community unified together, there is so much you can do for these family members to help bear them up, to help them deal with their grief. If you are unified, there is an incalculable amount you can do to help the direct family members and friends deal with the loss. We need in Virginia that spirit of community that you have here. We're bold enough to call ourselves not a state, but a commonwealth. A state is a dotted line. A state is a political subdivision. Commonwealth has a meaning. The meaning is what we have, the God-given and man-made resources that we have, we hold in common for a community. And you at Virginia Tech can be that community and demonstrate that community for us in a way that will benefit the entire Virginia. And finally, I would say to you, from having that vantage point of hearing about this on the other side of the world, it's not just you that need to maintain the spirit. The world needs you too. Because the world was watching you yesterday. And in the darkest moment in the history of this university, the world saw you and saw you respond in a way that built community. I was reminded in the airport as we got ready to board to come back. I've seen this story before. I've turned on the television and seen the bad news of a shooting or a weather emergency or a famine. I've seen these stories, and there will be more stories But there was something in the story yesterday that was different, and it was you. Your spirit of, even in a dark day, of optimism and community and hope and wanting to be together. And you taught something good yesterday, even in a dark day, to people all around the world, and the world needs that example before it. And so I pledge to do all I can, President Steger, and to the members of the community and my team as well, to be with you in these coming days, to be alongside of you in difficult times as we sort through and try to work with families and friends. You have a remarkable community here. Just look around and see this, and see the thousands of students next door. This is a remarkable place. Do not let hold of that sense of community, which is so powerful in this room. In the middle of the evening, shortly after we had received word, I received a call from the president, 3:30 in the morning, calling to ask about Virginia, how Virginia was doing, how were the students doing. President Bush was very engaged in wanting to know how people were doing, but more importantly, to say if there was anything he could do, he or the First Lady or the federal government could do to help. They wanted to be helpful, and they were helpful. We couldn't have gotten back here so quickly had it not been from assistance from the White House to enable us to be here today. President Bush is a man who knows deeply that one of the tough but necessary parts of leadership is comfort and consolation in hard times, first as a governor and now as a president. He embraces that aspect of leadership. And what a powerful and positive thing it is for the university today to welcome the President of the United States, President George Bush.
This is a convocation ceremony being held on the campus at Virginia Tech, and that was Governor Tim Kaine introducing the President of the United States.
Governor, thank you. President Steger, thank you very much. Students and faculty and staff and grieving family members and members of this really extraordinary place. Laura and I have come to Blacksburg today with hearts full of sorrow. This is a day of mourning for the Virginia Tech community, and it is a day of sadness for our entire nation. We've come to express our sympathy. In this time of anguish, I hope you know that people all over this country are thinking about you and asking God to provide comfort for all who have been affected. Yesterday began like any other day. Students woke up and they grabbed their backpacks and they headed for class. And soon the day took a dark turn, with students and faculty barricading themselves in classrooms and dormitories, confused, terrified, and deeply worried. By the end of the morning, it was the worst day of violence on a college campus in American history. And for many of you here today, it was the worst day of your lives. It's impossible to make sense of such violence and suffering. Those whose lives were taken did nothing to deserve their fate. They were simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. Now they're gone, and they leave behind grieving families and grieving classmates and a grieving nation. In such times as this, we look for sources of strength to sustain us. And in this moment of loss, you're finding these sources everywhere around you. These sources of strength are in this community, this college community. You have a compassionate and resilient community here at Virginia Tech. Even as yesterday's events were still unfolding, members of this community found each other. You came together in dorm rooms and dining halls and on blogs. One recent graduate wrote this: "I don't know most of you guys, but we're all Hokies, which means we're family. To all of you who are okay, I'm happy for that. For those of you who are in pain or have lost someone close to you, I'm sure you can call on any one of us and have help anytime you need. These sources of strength are with your loved ones. For many of you, your first instinct was to call home and let your moms and dads know that you were okay. Others took on the terrible duty of calling a relative or a classmate or a colleague who had been wounded or lost. I know many of you feel awfully far away from people you lean on, people you count on during difficult times. But as a dad, I can assure you a parent's love is never far from their child's heart. And as you draw closer to your own families in the coming days, I ask you to reach out to those who ache for sons and daughters who will never come home. These sources of strength are also in the faith that sustains so many of us. Across the town of Blacksburg and in towns all across America, houses of worship from every faith have opened their doors and have lifted you up in prayer. People who have never met you are praying for you. They're praying for your friends who have fallen and who are injured. There's a power in these prayers, a real power. In times like this, we can find comfort in the grace and guidance of a loving God. As the scriptures tells us, don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And on this terrible day of mourning, it's hard to imagine that a time will come when life at Virginia Tech will return to normal, but such a day will come. And when it does, you will always remember the friends and teachers who were lost yesterday, and the time you shared with them, and the lives they hope to lead. May God bless you. May God bless and keep the souls of the lost. And may His love touch all those who suffer in grief.
President Bush speaking to a convocation on the campus of Virginia Tech, where, of course, 32 people were killed yesterday by a gunman who then took his own life. We've been listening to Charles Steger, the president of the university, addressed the gathering of faculty and students, many of them dressed in the maroon and orange sweatshirts of the Hokies, the nickname of the university there. We also heard from the governor of Virginia, Tim Kaine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You can hear the latest on the developments and the investigation into the shootings on Virginia Tech later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, we'll also follow up on what's been happening there in Blacksburg, Virginia. Plus, political editor Ken Rudin will drop by for our regular weekly visit with the political junkie. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And right now, we're going to continue our remembrance of some of the victims from yesterday's shootings. Israeli Aeronautics engineer Liviu Librescu was no stranger to random cruelty. The 72-year-old survived the Holocaust and later escaped communist Romania. He was teaching in Norris Hall when the shooting started. Professor Librescu urged his students to go out the window to escape, but he stayed behind to stop the shooter from getting into the door. One of his students later said that when the gunman finally reached into the classroom, the professor threw himself in front of him, saving several of his students before he was shot to death. Yesterday was Holocaust Remembrance Day in Israel. The violence we saw yesterday morning, more than 30 dead, at least 20 others injured, would come as a shock to any community. For Virginia Tech, a quiet campus with wide views of the Blue Ridge Mountains, the news hit especially hard. VaTech sits on 2,600 acres in Blacksburg, Virginia, about 160 miles west of Richmond. Crime is low, life is often predictable. Students, some 26,000 of them, study architecture, business, agriculture, science, natural resources, and, of course, engineering. And they rally around their Hokies, the Division I sports team, with a mascot called the Hokie Bird. That mascot, a tough-looking turkey, can be found all across campus and is welcome on lawns all across Blacksburg. It's not a place anyone expects to face the country's deadliest mass shooting, on a campus. Joining us now is Professor Lucinda Roy. She's taught creative writing at Virginia Tech and has lived in the town of Blacksburg, where the school is located, for 22 years. Thanks very much for being with us today.
I'm glad to be with you today.
Describe the town for us. You wrote an op-ed piece in the Washington Post, which is why we called you up today. Describe it for us and describe where the campus sits in the life and geographically in Blacksburg.
Mm-hmm. Blacksburg is a small town, a small rural town in southwest Virginia in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and the university sits right in the heart of everything and really dominates the town. There are more students than there are townsfolk, so it certainly has a very strong presence. So if there's ever a football game or anything like that, then the whole town comes to life, and suddenly it seems as though we have so many inhabitants. But normally it's quiet and pretty sleepy, apart from students partying and having a good time.
And you also mentioned a place that's got a sense of humor about itself and putting those corny hokey birds all over the place.
Yeah, recently we put all kinds of different hokey turkey statues, larger than life size, all around the town, and they're all dressed differently, some in tuxedos, some in just ridiculous costumes, to celebrate the hokey spirit.
Now, as I understand it, 25,000-26,000 students, many of them drive to the campus every morning. This is a commuter school with, I guess, a large resident community as well.
We do have a large resident community as well, so I wouldn't call it a commuter school, but some students do commute, yes.
And that's an enormous campus.
It's a large campus. 2,600 acres is large, and we're pretty big.
You wrote in the New York Times, excuse me, I misidentified the newspaper, you wrote in the New York Times that you woke up Monday morning with a sense of dread.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been related to a recent trip you took to Sierra Leone.
Yes, that's what I put it down to, and it could well have been. Sierra Leone is a very difficult country, and as I think almost everyone would know, recovering from a brutal civil war. And so, yes, it was. I've often woken up with a sense of dread, having visited there recently, and knowing that the elections are coming up in July.
And a sense of disbelief, you said, when you noticed first on the TV a star on the town of Blacksburg. You wrote you couldn't believe it was your Blacksburg.
Yeah, because it seemed it wasn't. They weren't talking about sports, and that's why it was confusing to me. And then I remembered we'd had an incident in, I think it was August, a few months before, where there had been a gunman on the loose. And I thought, oh dear, that could be something like this time.
And then we heard the first reports of one person killed, and then suddenly the number jumped.
That's right. And I think for all of us here, it was that moment, maybe more than any other, that branded it in our spirits as something totally horrendous. We'd assumed, and in fact the reports had told us that it was going to be probably just one student. That's bad enough, one fatality. And we thought, well, we dealt with two fatalities in August. I know that we were thinking that way, and it seemed really terrible, but we thought that we would be able to manage. And then we heard that suddenly it leapt to all those fatalities, and it was WDBJ7 reporting, a local news station I was watching, and everyone just thought that there must have been a mistake, that what she really meant to say was 20 casualties. But it wasn't a mistake.
And the news got progressively worse through the day.
That's right.
Yeah. At some point, that sense of predictability, that sense of serenity, I guess, that you have treasured in Blacksburg, that vanished yesterday.
It did, yes. And I think we're still reconciling ourselves to that. That is, it's such a huge change that it takes a long time to adjust, and we're just beginning the adjustment process, I think.
Hmm. Now, it has emerged that the man who's believed responsible for the shooting, Sung-Wi Cho, was a student in one of the creative writing programs that you taught.
That's correct, and I didn't know that, actually, when I wrote the op-ed piece for the New York Times. They just happened to call me and invite me to do it, and I said yes. And it was only this morning that I discovered that it was someone I taught.
And that... that has to personalize this in a way that is completely new to you.
Yes, it does. And I've been through a lot in my life, but this is a real challenge, and it's an horrendous revelation, I think. It's anyone who has taught someone who would then go and do this kind of thing. It was just incredibly painful. Past words, really, past speaking.
And you obviously can't take any responsibility for this. Nevertheless, there's that certain sense of, if I could have reached him.
Yes, and yes, I was very concerned about this student, actually. And so I did try to reach out to some people, including the police and counseling, to try to get help.
Concerned about him, why?
I just felt that he was a very depressed student, and seemed to be angry about some things, and so I felt that there were some things that I needed to do to try to make sure that I reached out to him and found out more, because that's what you're meant to do as a teacher. And I was chairing the English department at the time, so I felt it was a personal responsibility.
So we always hear after these incidents that perhaps somebody would have noticed, somebody would have picked up some of the hints. If things turn out to have happened the way we now think they did, you did pick up the hints.
We did. There were several of us in the English department, and I contacted the police, contacted counseling, student affairs, the college, to try to sound some alarms. And they felt that their hands were tied legally for various reasons. As you probably know, until someone actually threatens to do something, it can be incredibly difficult to make something happen. But having taught for so long, there's a kind of second sense that you have, a special sense when you come across a student who seems to be very troubled. And it seemed to me that when that happened, then all my alarms went off, and so my quest became to try to make sure that faculty members were not in danger, and neither were students. And so trying to follow it up on it as best I could was a very important thing.
Can you? He's been described to us by others as a loner. Does that jibe with what your experience of him was?
Yes, that's right.
And his writings, we've also seen reports that his writings were, well, you could describe them better, obviously, than I could.
You know, I've been told by the police, and I've still got to talk to the FBI, that there are certain things I can't disclose, and that one of them is the nature of his writings, and I think that's because there's an ongoing investigation, and also because of student confidentiality issues. So I'm sorry I won't be able to comment on that.
Very well. I know you're also not attending the convocation that's underway, and I understand you're doing that in part because you're counseling students.
I'm trying to call people and faculty as much as students and talk to them and just see how we can pull together. We're all doing that. We're all trying to help each other as much as we can.
You wrote in your piece in the Times that two graduate students who'd recently been accepted into your creative writing program called to say that they still planned on coming next September.
That's right.
And what did you say to them?
I told them I was so moved by the phone call, because there was no need for them to call and tell me that. And it was a special kind of kindness. And I do think at times like this, if you're really lucky, and I've been very fortunate, people reach out to you and give you these small gifts of kindness. And I felt that that's what they were doing, and they became very large gifts to me. And I thought that they were courageous, and I also thought it will be my duty and the rest of the creative writing faculty and English faculty to make sure that they feel welcome, and will do everything we can to make sure that happens.
Lucinda Roy, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate you speaking with us.
Thank you.
Lucinda Roy has taught at Virginia Tech for 22 years, wrote an op-ed in today's New York Times called A Black Day in the Blue Ridge. She spoke with us today from her home in Blacksburg, Virginia. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.